great.
Let's find our seats. Please, please, please. I got a quick announcement to make, and then there's one on the heels of that. So October 25th, is that the right date? That sounds right to me. October 20th, there it is. From 9 to 5, there will be Restoring the Foundations. Sage and I went through the intense side of Restoring the Foundations, which is a whole week, and it was amazing. So we asked the couple that did our session, if you will, to come and do some ministry here, and they're going to be bringing some equipping and tools, and so we have a video, right? So if we could play the video, then I'll finish. That will be October 25th, which is a Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Cost is $25. You'll get a workbook. Your life will be changed forever, and you'll have no more problems ever again. Maybe not quite like that, but it will give you some tools and equip you to prepare for war. So, what's that? Oh, there's a lunch. Yes, see, it says workbook and lunch. There's a QR code if you want to hit that up. Make sure we need to know who is coming so we have the right amount of books. So you can either hit the QR code and go straight to registration, or that's the easiest way. That's the way right there. QR code, bang, bang, register. Where'd your mom go? Oh, there she is. One more announcement. People were wondering, what in the world is that? That's what they were. I could hear them. Yeah. I just heard them. Like, I could hear their brain thinking that.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Good morning. For those of you who'd like to know, this is a sukkah. It is a tabernacle. So we are going to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles here this evening. The feast is tomorrow, but Sage and Zach are flying out tonight, and they really wanted to be a part of it. So we're doing it tonight at 6 o'clock. You know what? I just have to take a minute just to say some praises to someone. Ethan cuts us down, all the trees. He put it together with dowels, or he made, like, dowels. And then he brought it here and put it. I think it is so creative, and I love the idea of how it looks like tree branches coming out. And it's amazing. It's got a bit of whimsy, and I love it. So, the Feast of Tabernacles is really the whole center of the feast is about us tabernacling with Jesus, about us living in him. And so I'll share more about that tonight. Tonight there's going to be food, there's going to be festivity, we're going to do a fun craft, we're going to hang some things in the tabernacle, and Holy Spirit will be here, which is the very best part. And so please come and enjoy.
So basically what I heard was Ethan wanted to show off, so he built, oh no, just kidding. I appreciate it. I know how much work went to that, especially these creative 45s you had to make, and yikes, man. Good job. I am amazing. I just said what everybody else was thinking, so. Just kidding. All right. Let's pray and jump in. I didn't forget anything, right? Okay. All right. Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for all that you're doing, Lord, in our hearts, in our lives, in our state, in our nation, in the world. Thank you that we see you at work in all things. Thank you, Lord, that we don't live underneath our circumstances, but we are called to be overcomers, to rise above the things that try to oppress and keep us down. We thank you. We give you the glory and the honor in Jesus' name. Amen. I want to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17 real quick. Is where I'm thinking of. I think that's where I'm going to start. I do want to acknowledge Jonathan Miracle here. We're so thankful to have you here. We love you. Yes. We're thankful that Josh Moss and Christina are here as well. So we love you guys too. I am going to go to 1 Samuel chapter 17. I just feel Mark 3 and 4 kind of jumping at me for a minute. I want to speak to you a little bit about seed. I have a bunch of stuff written down on seed, but I don't think I'm going to go down that road. I just want to say this. Seed is the beginning of a thing. All things that come from the kingdom come in seed form, including our lives. The promises of God come in seed form. So Mark chapter 3, you can turn there if you want, or I'm probably just going to kind of tell the story a little bit to set up Mark chapter 4, because I want to talk about Mark 4 for a sec. But Mark 3, you see Jesus heal a guy on the Sabbath. People freak out about it. You guys remember this story? And then Jesus gets crowds of people following him. About midway down Mark chapter 3, Jesus goes up, removes himself from the crowd, and he calls the 12 unto himself. It says, he called the 12, those who he chose. So individually, he went and it names their names, who he chose. In fact, it calls James and John, that's where we see the term sons of thunder. It's not the first place, but it's where one of the places we see the term sons of thunder, and it names off the 12, and Jesus is like instilling in them a seed of promise about the kingdom, who they are, what they saw, I'm not saying these are the words written. I'm saying this is what was going on as he's trying to unfold for them, I have chosen you. Then they get in a boat. And they go out. Actually, it says that they went to go get in a boat, and Jesus was already in the boat. They push the boat out. They go out in the boat, and it says there was a bunch of other boats following them. Anybody reading Mark 3 while I'm saying this? Okay, good, because I might be making it up. No, I'm not. It's real. It's there. I like somebody to be reading it as I'm telling it so that if I am forgetting something, be like, hey, what about? But there was other boats following the boat, and a storm came up. Right? And the other boats began to turn back. You remember this story? Does this sound familiar to you? So the boats began to turn back, and in the midst of this storm, this is where Jesus tells the storm, peace be still. But in the midst of this storm, here's what God began to speak to me. This is the reason I brought this out. There was a seed planted in the hearts of these 12 men. We're going to change the world. God's going to use you to radically change the world. And then they get up and they go get in a storm. And they don't know what to do in this storm. So they're kind of shook a bit to the point that they're like, wait a minute. We might actually die. Like, this is freaking me out. And Jesus stands up, speaks to the storm. He's trying to show them something. That just because you have a promise, just because you have seed in your heart, doesn't mean the storm stops. In fact, I would go on to say that if you're moving forward, get ready for a storm. I know that's not super encouraging, but it's true. We struggle through the storms and we let the storms begin to dictate how we're going to respond when the storm was not the focal point. It was not the thing. There was a seed planted that was always true. The storm didn't change the truth, but it needed time for the seed to begin to produce something. Do you understand? So Mark chapter 4,
I ain't far enough. Try 26.
Yes, perfect. And he said, the kingdom of God is as if a man should scatter seed. Hear me. The kingdom of God is as if a man should scatter seed. So we are to scatter seed, right? The seeds of promise go out from us on the ground. Keep going. And should... Okay, that just doesn't look right, but okay. And should sleep by night and rise by day, and the seed should sprout and grow. He himself does not know how. So if you're reading out of the Passion, I think it says that basically this way, a seed produces fruit while he's sleeping, and he doesn't even know how it's done. Like, it just happened. Suddenly the seed bursts forth. Like, you see nothing. It's ground. It's dirt. There's something under there. I don't know what's going on. I don't see the process. I just, all of a sudden, boom, something happens, and I was asleep. So, keep going. For the earth yields crops by itself, first the blade, then the head, then the full grain in the head. There is a process. We don't like the process. We want seed. We want promise. We want fulfillment. We want what we want. We want it now. I used to say it this way. We are a microwave generation and we serve a crockpot God. What? You don't know what a microwave is? You stick it in, you press a button, it goes ding, it's done. Put some popcorn in there, hit the popcorn button and watch what happens. Or you can do it old school on the stove. I was like a choo-choo train. Keep going. Verse 29. When the grain ripens, immediately puts in the sickle because the harvest has come. Let's keep going. Then he said, to what shall we liken the kingdom of God? Or with what parable shall we picture it? It's like a mustard seed. What is? Kingdom. What about the kingdom? The promise of the kingdom is like a mustard seed. It's the smallest of all seeds, right? Yet when it produces, I know I kind of got off, but when it produces the largest tree in the garden. Right? So much so that the birds of the air come and nest in it. It produces shade produces shade that brings relief to others around it. The point is this. That mustard seed, or any tree for that matter, does not come up instantly, nor does it produce fruit instantly. We struggle through. I watch and speak to people who are struggling through things, and they're drowning in this, like, fight, this battle, this storm. Like, I know this is where I'm supposed to be, but I'm over here, and I don't know how to get there, so I feel like I'm stuck here. But listen, seed is the beginning of all things. So, let's go to 1 Samuel 17, and I'm going to build on this just a little bit so that you can get what I'm trying to lay down here. 1 Samuel chapter 17, we'll start in verse 1. I may jump down just a little in it, so we're not reading tons, but maybe not. This is one of my all-time favorite. Love this story, and there's so much in it. So, now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle. This is verse 1. And were gathered at Sukkoth, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between, actually I guess it's Soko, and I don't know how you say that, Azekah, in Ephes, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in a battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side with a valley between them. Got the picture? Kind of weird, not the way we do battle now, but the way they did it back then. And so they're staring at each other. They're facing each other off. There's a valley they're going to meet in to battle. So they're standing both on the high ground, because if you're on the high ground and somebody comes over, like, you've got the advantage. That's why they would come and meet in the middle anyway. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. There's a lot of different thoughts on this. It's over 9 feet. Huh? 9.75 feet. 3 meters. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. How much is that? 125 pounds. Did you just say that? Good job. 125 pounds. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and it weighed 125 pounds. Next verse. And he had a bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels. Anyone? 15 pounds. Good. Oh, NLT. It'll say it in the NLT. Yeah. And a shield bearer went before him. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." Is it okay if I keep reading, or do you want me to jump down? Nobody actually wants to say what they're thinking, but I'm going to keep reading. Okay. And the Philistines said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." Just really quick. I'm a picture person. Like, my mind, I have a tendency to put myself in the situation, which I'm sure you do too. But I'm picturing this man just walking back and forth and taunting and teasing and calling out, like, not, you know, you read it, you see, "Give me a man." It's almost as if he said, "All I see is boys. Where's the man? Is there a man among you that wants to come out and do battle with me? Like, here I am, a Philistine. I'm supposed to be your enemy. I'm the one who you have, the God that you speak of, that's supposed to be so strong, so amazing. Yet I stand here and defy him today." Like, that's how I see this going. Listen to this. "They were dismayed and greatly afraid." That word dismayed, I can't remember the Hebrew word. It's like aluk. It's A-H-L-O-Q or L-U-Q, I think is how it says. But it is literally to be shattered, broken to pieces. It's more than just like, oh no. It's like their hearts just went, like, deflated, gone. Afraid doesn't do the justice. Dismayed, in my opinion, I'm not saying it's a poor translation, I'm just saying it doesn't do enough for the way, like, as you break this word down, it is broken to pieces. All your hope dashed. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite, or of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons, and the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to the battle. The names of the 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him, Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. This is telling you where David is. If you read chapter 16, that's the chapter where David is actually playing his harp for Saul. He's being tormented by an evil spirit that was sent from God. He's playing his harp and bringing relief to Saul. And so Saul was like, "You're going to stay here forever. Like, I need you." But he would let him go. That's what this is saying. Occasionally he would go back to his father and feed the sheep that he was supposed to be taking care of. So he's with his dad, and that's what they're letting you know. So, verse 16. And the Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days. Listen, morning and evening. Twice a day. 80 times now. He has presented himself and said this. Oh no, it doesn't say it. Never mind. He kept saying the same thing though. Just taunting. "Is there not a man among you? What is wrong with you?" It was to just break their spirit completely. Just. Then Jesse said to his son David, "Take now for your brothers an, however, ephah of this dried grain and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp, bringing them some grilled cheese sandwiches. And carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their thousand and see how your brothers fare and bring back news of them. Now, Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. That's kind of a weird statement, but okay. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with a keeper, and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. So they're thinking, they're in full-on battle, it's crazy, but you just go check on them, make sure they're still living, you know, not realizing what he's about to walk into. David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the camp as the army was going out to fight and shouting for the battle. Okay, picture. Again, you got to get this. This is super important. They had what they called battle lines drawn up. As your side, this is our side. They would run out every day, screaming. They'd get to the line and go, urch. Goliath would come out and be like, who's a man? You guys are wimps, whatever. And they all went, I ain't going. I ain't going. Like, what did they think was going to change? Day after day, stopping at this one line. Like, this is as far as I'm going to go. I'm not going to step over that line. I'm not going to be the one. I'm not even going to pretend like I'm, you know, like I'll stop right here and maybe something will change tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow there'll be one of these guys will step past the line. Maybe tomorrow something will happen. Maybe tomorrow God will just strike him dead. Maybe tomorrow he won't come out. Maybe he'll oversleep. Maybe, I don't know, whatever they're thinking, but they run out to these battle lines every day, yelling, screaming. Kind of remind me of church services. Run out to the battle lines, yelling, screaming, and go, urch, this is good enough. Anyway, for Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in the battle array, army against army. Verse 22. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, Philistine of Gath, Goliath, by name, coming up from the armies of Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words, so David heard them. So now David's hearing this, right? He's walking amongst his heroes. Like, he knew these guys. They probably had dinner at his house at time. You know, some of these warriors, these men that were godly men, that were ready for battle, that God had used to do amazing, crazy things. He's looking at them going, right? Who's going to go out? Like, you hear the same thing I do, right? We're not going to let that go on. That Eliab, surely you're Eliab. You're the man. You're going to go take, right? Abinadab. Right? Shammah. These are his brothers. But there was others there. They were just as mean and tough. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. Same word. Just broken, like terrified, shaking in their boots, hiding. So the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who's come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches. Will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in the United States of America. Oh no, in Israel. Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, wait, what shall be done for the man who killed him? He just heard it, so now he's won some clarity. What shall be done for the man? I find this interesting, really super interesting, and I'll tell you why. This is my personal opinion. This is not doctrine. This is not anything reflective of what this church believes. This is what I see. Potentially, something kind of shifted in David a little bit here. And I'll tell you why I'm thinking this with the next verse or two. Something shifted in him of, like, a distraction, in a sense. A flash of, like, I could get what? If I do this, I could get what? What would happen to the guy who, that's interesting. And I'll show this to you in a sec as we read. What shall be done for the man of then? And it takes away the reproach from Israel. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine? Like, he's still in this stuff. He's like, who is this guy that he would come and defy the armies of the living God? Like, who does he think he is? And the people answered him in this manner, saying, so shall it be done for the man who killed him. Now watch this. Now Eliab, his older brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here? And with whom did you leave? He starts belittling. Who did you leave those few sheep with? Like, your job is really not much. You're really pretty, like, minuscule. You're prideful. You came down here to watch a fight. You just came down here because, but your little pitiful job that you generally do, who did you pawn that off to? You may not see it that way. That's the way I see it. I don't know why else he'd say those few sheep. Like, who did you leave those few sheep with? In the wilderness. I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. And David said, what have I done now? Here's the phrase. Is there not a cause? That word cause is, I lost the word. I don't know how to say it now. It's a Hebrew word, and it actually means promise. Could have been said like this. Is there not a seed of promise for the children of Israel? Did God not say we would overcome our enemies? Why are we hiding back here? As if we've never seen a giant before. I know. Listen, hear what I'm telling you. The Israelites wandered around the wilderness for 40 years, right? They never saw a giant in that wilderness. Where did they see the first giant? When they stepped into the promised land. What did it do to them? It melted their hearts to where they were broken to pieces in their heart. And they went back and said, we can't do it. Except for two of them. 10 of them, though, saw the giants. They saw the promise. They saw all the goodness, but they saw the giants, and it crushed them. But listen, they didn't see them until they stepped into a promise that God said, this is yours. I've already given it to you. But because there was a new battle they had to face, they went, It's the same thing happening in this story. As long as they're just normal guys we're fighting, we're good. But that dude's huge. No. This is a different kind of battle. That guy has a 15-pound spearhead. He's wearing, it's not like they were like, 125-pound coat. It's a story that, they didn't weigh it, the Israelites. But they could tell, like, this guy, he's fully decked out. He's got a shield bearer standing in front of him. And I'm going to go out there and fight him? No. So David's going, guys, is there not a promise? Don't we have the seed of promise? Doesn't mean we're not going to face battles and fights and storms. But don't we have a promise? Isn't the battle already won? We still have to fight it, but isn't the outcome already determined? Keep going. Then he turned from him toward another, said the same thing, and these people answered him. I am going to keep reading. Word gets back to Saul. I don't know how far I'm skipping down. But word gets not very far. Word gets back to Saul. Saul calls for him. Bring the kid here. Right? He didn't call him kid because he didn't know who he is. He just hears there's a guy willing to go fight. Because that's what David says. Hey, if none of y'all are going to do it, I'll go do it. Because I know who I serve. I know the promise. So, yeah, they reported it to Saul. And he sent for him. Perfect. Verse 32. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with Philistines. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are youth, and he a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. So he tells him about keeping his father's sheep. Lion comes out, kill the lion, kill the bear. This Philistine will be just like them. God will give me victory over him. So it went out after it struck it, killed it. Verse 36. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Verse 37. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. Saul said to David, go. Oh, and the Lord be with you. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. This is where I started looking at going, David is allowing something in him to change. Like, I know there's a whole lot of speculation around why this is happening. And one of the big reasons was, and I kind of ascribe to this, that if David goes out there and has victory and he's dressed like Saul, Saul will actually get the accolades for the battle. But whether that's true or not, I don't know. Saul clothed David with his armor, so his own armor. Saul began to put this on David, and David is allowing this at first. Right? David's allowing himself to be dressed in something he doesn't have, he's not used to, he shouldn't be in because he's not, like, it's not something that he's called to operate in. But he's going, maybe this is right. Maybe this is okay. Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, sure, why not? Again, the way I see it. You may not see it that way. You can stay wrong if you want to. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. So David took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand. That is so important. So, so important. David took off the armor. Why did he pick up his shepherd's staff? Thank you. There were a few things that were inscribed on David's shepherd's staff. One was the name of God would have been inscribed on David's shepherd's staff. Now, there's tradition that says he potentially had the very staff that... Now, again, you can do with this whatever you will. I'm not saying this is truth. This is just tradition. Is that the staff that David carried was actually cut out of the tree of life and was the same staff that Moses had, and it got passed down all the way, somehow ended up in David's hand. I don't know. I don't think that's the point. The point being, he took the staff in his hand because on that staff, not only did he have the name of God, not only did he have the promises of God carved into this staff, he had the victory that God had given him carved in this staff. Because he grabbed the staff, right, and he walks down to a stream or a river, which, if you're going to be going, because we know he goes down to pick up five smooth stones, if you're going to be picking, like, you don't want things in your hands. You want to be able to pick up those stones and feel them and make sure they're the ones you want, right? But no, he was holding on to the promise. as he went down to this river and he began to pick up, so it says brook here, but he chose for himself five smooth stones. That word smooth, its root word in Hebrew is set apart. It is appointed. It is smoother and that's all we need to grab out of that. But as I was looking at this, it's literally, if you think about this from the point of God's seed, right, the seed that was planted, it's these stones God appointed from the beginning and had them in the place that he needed to be as seed, waiting to be scooped up for the right time. He could have picked any rocks. He could have picked, right? But he picked the five smooth stones. I know there was lots and lots of smooth stones. But he picked the five smooth stones that he needed to pick that I believe, again, my opinion, but I believe the reason they were smooth was that David was well-practiced in his operating of his sling and, like, there's all kinds of literature out there and thoughts of how these guys with slings could, you know, pick the wings off a fly. You know, that's exaggeration, but they were super accurate. But the right stones had to be chosen so that they flew correctly, so that they stayed straight or they curved or they, you know, whatever they needed, they knew exactly what stones. And those stones laying in that water, being rushed, you know, water just rushing over them and knocking off the rough edges and maybe being knocked around by the current and hitting other stones and knocking. The seed, though, of those stones had been there for I don't know how long before they were smoothed out exactly where they needed to be and just like they needed to be as David scooped them up and decided these are the ones that I need, as he's holding on to the promises of God, knowing that I'm about to go into a battle with someone who's far more, battle worthy, far more strong, far more able, far more capable. He's got far more armor. He's all of those things, but I have a promise. I have the seed of promise in me, and I know I'm going to still have to face this guy. And I know I'm still going to have to fight this battle. And I know I'm still going to have to overcome this giant, this thing that is standing between us and the promise that God said. Us and victory is this giant, this battle, this fight that somebody's got to step over this line. But I got a promise, you see. And so David goes out. I'm just going to tell the story, the rest of it, myself. David goes out, right? And they come out, and it says his armor bearer, again, shield bearer, was standing in front of him. I mean, this is no small thing that's happening. He's got a helmet on, and it's not like it's just this wide-open target. Like, David has to be accurate. But yet, it doesn't say he wasn't afraid. It doesn't say that he wasn't a little intimidated. He just went out knowing, I've got a promise. I've got a cause. I've got the whole reason that seed was planted in me. God called me to be king, and I'm out here fighting this fight, but this is the road to that. And if I want to see the fulfillment, if I want to see the head of grain come up out of this small shoot that started out of the dirt, because I just feel like I'm nothing but a shoot, I feel like I've got some life. I feel like I've grown a little bit. At least I'm not stuck in the mud. I've broke through the ground a little. But man, I feel like I'm about to be mowed over. But I know that God called me to produce grain. And so in order to take the next step, if I've got to take out a giant, I'm going to take out a giant. Do you hear me? Is this making sense? And so David goes out, right? And
He's got this sling, and it says he releases the stone, and it says it sunk into the forehead of this giant, who ends up falling, quite possibly right on top of his shield bearer. And anyway, David ends up, it actually says the stone killed him. Like it sunk into his forehead. David takes out Goliath's sword and lops the head off this giant. And then we kind of know what happens from there. But maybe you don't. You might not know, but that's another day. We struggle through our relationship with each other, with God, with life, with all the different things going on, because we struggle to know what to do with seed. Because we feel like we've been given a promise, and we feel like the battle should be pretty much over or get a little easier. The storm should no longer rage against me, because I'm with Jesus now. And as long as I'm with Him, that means nothing should, right? And somehow we've convinced ourselves of this. And somehow we forgot that all things come in seed form, but the seed that we're given has the ability to produce everything that God has said is going to take place. But we also have to realize that every time we move forward in something, there's new and sometimes bigger battles that take place. But we've been given all things to be able to overcome. But if we were just given this free flow road to everything and it was easy and we would get to the next thing and just be like, cool, whatever, and we wouldn't care, and we would just move on and be like, yeah, that's great, thanks, you know, yep, that's cool, whatever. It's sort of like I feel sometimes about how church is looked at, is we sing songs, and I don't know if you're like me, but sometimes I step back and I look at the words and I'm going, I know I mean that in my heart, and I know that's my desire. I feel like I've lost a little something because I'm allowing what I'm going through to dictate to me how I actually enter into being with Him. Does that make sense? I do want to read this. Thankfulness is seed for joy. I actually have like 11 different things that I wrote on. This is seed for that. This is seed for that. This is seed for that. But I really wanted to hit on this one, because I think we find ourselves so far under our circumstances or in storms that we are programmed to see the negative of everything that we do, every relationship we have, every room we walk in. I'll give you an example. If you came here today and you had a headache, there would probably be 14 people you'd tell about that headache before you sat down in your seat. How you doing? Oh, I'm doing okay. I just got this headache. Why? Because we're programmed to bring out the negative things that we're dealing with. Because either one, we want sympathy. We don't know how to have a relationship unless we're talking to each other about the negative things that are. I'm not saying we should pretend like everything's good. But when we're not going through that headache, we don't turn and go, man, I'm so thankful I don't have a headache today. I feel great. Today's a good day. Somebody says, how you doing? And the first thing we do is start thinking about what negative things. Well, I'm doing good. You know what, though? My kid's crazy. How you doing? Good. Last night, though, stubbed my toe. It hurt. I didn't sleep well. And I yelled at my wife. I didn't, but, you know, whatever. Why? Because we are programmed. Listen, what I mean by that, every bit of news we watch is so focused on negative, negative, negative. The government shut down. Everything came to a halt. It's a horrible. Then people go, it must be the end time. Jesus is coming back at any minute because the government shut down. And I'm thinking, well, what about the guy who's like in another country that's going, I don't really care what's happening in your government right now. Jesus is doing amazing things over here. You know, not that Jesus isn't doing amazing things in America. I'm just saying, like, we are so focused on what we are. I mean, our country is geared this way. I learned this in a weird way. I'm driving through Canada years ago, and Sage and I, we were somewhere, hotel or something, and the news was on. And this was probably 2005 or somewhere in there. And I said, I have not seen hardly a thing on the United States on the news. It's all world news. It's all about what's happening over here, over here, over here, over here, over here. When you're in the U.S., it's like, yeah, there was a bombing in France, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, in the United States, this is what's going on, and it's all bad. And there's a hurricane over here, and there's an earthquake over here in this part of the United States, and this part of the United States, this is happening. And and we're all like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And we're focused on the negative, and focused on the negative, and focused on, I'm not saying we should put our heads in the sand. I'm just saying we are geared towards seeing the negative. So when something comes in seed form, even as it begins to produce something, life, and it gets involved in the wind of the negative, it's like, because we forget to go, you know what? Yeah, there's a storm going on. Yeah, there's difficulty. Yeah, I'm tired. Yeah, all of that, but there's a promise. And this storm feels different than any other storm I've ever been in. Okay. This one feels like a giant. Cool. There's still a promise. Cool. There's still a promise. There's still a call. You still have the ability to grab a hold of that promise, to reach down and begin to find your five stones. You understand? You still have the ability to go, oh, wait, Jesus is in my boat. Right? So even if my boat can sink, Jesus can't. I'm going to hold on to him. Right? We get focused on the boat. This boat's wood. Ooh, that wood's creaking. Those nails are starting to come out. I'm not sure. Was it constructed right? No, I'm in an aluminum boat. It's okay. I wonder if the welds are going to hold. I mean, whatever. It's like, whoa. And we get focused on what we're in instead of focused on the one who's in us. Listen, whatever you're going through, whatever's happening to you, you're going to make it. You're going to make it. You're going to be victorious. You're going to overcome. This will not end in death. Not death as we know. Listen, even if you physically die, you don't die. That's what I mean. It doesn't matter. I really want to say this carefully because I don't mean any disrespect or belittling by this, but it doesn't matter what you might be going through as far as the promises of God are true. What are we holding on to? What do we have in our hands? Is it just a stick? Is it just
just another piece of wood, or do we have the promises of God that we're holding on to? Do you hear me? Are we actually, like, instead of searching for something to help me get through this, we have the ultimate helper, right? I'm trying to be really careful how I'm saying this, because it's not that I don't think we should ask for help. We 100% should. I don't have this written down, and I might be saying this wrong, but hopefully you'll hear my heart. Problems are seed for change. Hear what I'm saying. Like, if you don't like your hair, if your hair is a problem, go get it cut. Shave it off. Do something. If you like your hair, then cool. If you don't like where you work, quit. Go somewhere else. I'm like, you can do something about that. But if we find ourselves in a problem and all we do is complain to everybody else about what we're going through, guess what we're spreading? Discouragement, seeds of displeasure, seeds of disunity, seeds of dissension, seeds of, and because all of it is seed. Not just promises, not just the kingdom. Discouragement comes in seed form. And it takes root, and it begins to produce something. And as it comes up, you know, the storms of promise try to hit it. And sometimes those storms of discouragement are stronger than a storm of promise, because we don't know how to hold on to something we can't see. I can see and feel this, and it makes me feel a certain way, and it makes me, and so I'm gonna say this somehow is bigger than this. And it probably feels like that. And it probably sounds like that. And it even appears like that at times. But I promise, if you hold on to the promise of God, not holding on to it, going, because listen, this is what the Israelites were doing. They were hiding behind rocks, hoping that the promise that they had was enough to just defeat the giant. I don't want to go out there and fight. You will never outgrow war. Hear what I'm saying. There will always be warfare in your walk. Why? Because we have a real live enemy that wants to kill you. We have a real live enemy that wants to steal from you. We have a real live enemy that wants to take every promise that you have and make it look like it's nothing. That's what I mean by that. That will never stop. What changes is what we're holding on to. What changes is what we begin to go, I've been given authority over that. I don't need to deal with that. I don't need to let that whisper in my ear. I can take care of it right now. Right? And then we step in and we hear something different. And we're like, I need to learn how to fight through this a little bit. I need to learn how to, you know. And some of it is just rough edges need to get knocked off me so I can fly a little bit better. Because I'm a tool, I'm a weapon in God's hands, and He's spinning me around in circles right now, and I'm getting dizzy, but I know He's about to release me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to stay in the sling. I want to get released. I don't want to stay in the river being rolled around, knocking into some of you people. I'm just playing. But you hear my heart. I think, I hope. I that's kind of how we get developed, though. It's a process. It's a process we all go through. And like iron sharpening iron, right? There's a lot of sparks, but boy, is it getting sharp. And ready for what? Not ready to put in a closet. Not ready to put in a sheath and up there if I need it. No. It's being sharpened so you can wield it. It's being sharpened so you can use it. The stones are being smoothed out so they can fly. That you are being formed so you can go where you need to go. But if we stop at the battle line every time, if we stop there, the promises are still true. They're still real. They're still there. They're still obvious. And sometimes things happen without us ever engaging anything and doing anything. I get all that. But generally speaking, if all of us are honest, every time we take a step forward, there feels like a whole other gust of wind coming at us.
feels like a whole other squall, feels like another tornado, feels like another whatever you want to call it. But if we'll keep moving in the storm and know which storms we're supposed to say, nope, stop, peace be still, and watch it stop, and which storms are meant to get us to pitch off of our boats the things that are weighing us down that we don't need to be carrying so that we can actually go through it or whatever. Like, there's a purpose. There's a reason for everything we're doing, but the promise never changes. The promise is always there. Listen, we grab a hold of the seed of the promise and we allow God to do what He needs to do. Our focus is not on me or all my junk or all my stuff that I'm dealing with. And if we begin to even relate to each other this way, that, look, I may not be the easiest person to get along with. I may not be the easiest person to talk to. I may not, you know, whatever kind of things we might be dealing with, but I'm in the same promise as you are. And together, as we link arms and we go, you know what, I'm not going to stand behind this rock and let a giant beat you up anymore. Let's go on forward together. Right? It doesn't just become about me. I'm going to take you into the promised land and you into the promised land and you into the promised land. We're going together. Because I promise you that 3, 5, 7, 20, 2,000 of us that go against the enemy is a whole lot better than me standing out here by myself going, I'm going to kick the tail of the enemy over and over. And I'm just going to keep kicking until I can't kick no more. And yeah, that's great. I can put 1,000 to flight, but the two of us can put 10,000 to flight. I mean, you know, synergy. Hello. Have you thanked God for anything today? Thankfulness is the seed for joy. We need more joy. We need more thankfulness. We need more of Him in our lives. So I'm going to have you stand with me, please. Actually, while you're standing, I'm gonna pray, but I want to do something. There's a team of us going to Washington D.C. this week, this coming week. There's Awaken the Dawn, Communion America is what it's called. There's 50 tents gonna be on the mall at Washington. They call it the mall. I know. I was just. Did I say 50 tents? Oh, 50 state tents. 51, because there are Puerto Ricos in there too, that are stretching all the way from the Washington Monument to the Capitol building. And we're going to do a communion table that will stretch that entire length. But there's also a First Nations tent, and I don't remember what all. There's like 8 or 10 other tents besides the state tent. But I don't even know how many people are expected to show up to this. There's going to be hours and hours, 24 hours a day for like 3 days. Around 50 hours of prayer going into this or during this event. Nights of worship, outreach, youth service. I mean, there's a lot going on. And so I feel that we are kind of taking a step into something. I know some have been to Awaken the Dawn. I've never been. And we are going to be a part of the Alaska tent there. And I don't know what that's going to look like or what that's going to mean or happen. There's always crazy stuff that happens to us in D.C. Good stuff, not crazy. Always doors that get open in that we get to be in other people's lives. To just pray over the team that's going and bless them. I'd like to do that as well. So, Father, Thank you. Inside of that seed is everything needed to fulfill the promise. Everything needed to produce the fruit of what you say it is there. And so we choose today to step beyond any line that we have maybe stepped up to and gone, that doesn't look fun. That doesn't look easy. That looks too big. We determine today to step beyond that line. We also thank you that, Lord, as you're working out the rough edges and sharpening us for use inside of the kingdom, Lord, we embrace the sharpening. We embrace the knowledge of the edges. Whatever you need to do in us, Lord. But I pray that we would stop seeing everything in a